Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. It's a crazy world out there with all of the issues related to COVID, and then all of the issues with America and really the world being so divided. The people's reactions to what occurred a week or so ago. I thought it was hilarious that the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, decided that she would impeach Trump a second time. Before the Senate trial could even take place, before she even sends her articles of impeachment to the floor of the U.S. Senate, he will already be out of office. So, can you explain to me what the purpose is of impeachment if the person is already out of office?
Show off. Just a show. Put on a show.
Just because that little weasel of a woman can show us, see, ha, 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 I'm still in power and you're not?
I would think so.
It is indeed pathetic. To give an update as to where we are on our books, we have now completed, and they are available for purchase. I'm not trying to sell anything, as anybody knows here. They're all royalty-free. They are exceedingly inexpensive for the size and the quality of the books. But the first three volumes of Yada Yada are now up on the Amazon site. They are In the Beginning, The Story of Man, and In the Covenant. They're actually smaller books than what we have done. They're much more approachable in size at about 500 pages. So I encourage you to read them. An amazing number of new insights into them. For a while now, we've had the five volumes of Observations available, and the first two volumes of Coming Home are available. I finished the rewrite of Volume 1 of Questioning Paul about a week ago. There's still a fair amount of work that Jackie is doing, which is trying to convert all of the colored text which was used throughout that book to show the various different translations, because in addition to my own translation, you know, I had the New Living Translation, the King James Translation, and the Nestle Allen Interlinear Translation was all woven into it. So she's doing that. And then we're also trying to gray back a little bit, even my translations of Paul's words, so that they aren't presented in the same bold font, really, that Yahweh's testimony is. So, but I would expect within the next week that we'll see the first volume of Questioning Paul done. And my part of the rewrite, I'm about two-thirds finished with volume two of Questioning Paul. The original Questioning Paul, the edited version of it anyway, about 7 years ago, got to be about 1,200 pages in the old typeface. That's probably more in the range of 2,000 pages in standard typeface, which is what we're using now. So it will be at least three volumes for the old version of Questioning Paul. As I say, I'm nearing now two-thirds done with volume two. And then we're going to add a fourth volume to Questioning Paul, which brings into it some of the analysis we've done on the Christian New Testament, the history of the book of Matthew, its anti-Semitism, some of the diatribes Paul, that we've diagnosed that Paul has embarrassed himself in the book of Acts, the history of translation, and the overall statements that come from the Mizmor and Proverbs that mention Paul by name and either call him the plague of death, the father of lies, or the son of evil. So we'll weave those things in. I think by the time we're done, we'll have four volumes of Questioning Paul. And then the intent is to spend what will probably be 4 months at the very least rewriting what was volume two of Yada Yahweh, which is based on the Moed Mikre. My guess is that's going to be at least three volumes by the time we're done. It's going to take a long time because, as it turns out, I haven't retranslated those volumes, the passages that support those volumes, in probably 7 or 8 years. And so that much new translation, well, it needs to be done. We're looking at a lot of work, so I expect that to take a while. So that's kind of where we are on this whole process, and we'll continue to work through it. I'm hoping to finish the rewrites of everything such that they're done by the end of this year. And then I've got about a year's work in front of me for volume three of Coming Home. So that's where we are. Anybody have any questions, kind of knowing where we are on all this?
kind of overwhelming, isn't it? But
it is.
No,
it is. We have a really good team. Yeah, I'm not going to be retired anytime soon. We have a really really good editing team, fact checking team, working on these books, and you know it's a real pleasure to work with this team. We're just I think we're putting out a really top notch product. So I'm pleased with the end result. It's worth the effort.
I was just going to say this one little change that I thought you ought to make, not really, tongue in cheek, but you wrote in your commentary and the stuff that we're reading right now, you defined Mitzrayim much better, I think. You called it religious coercion, political tyranny, military dominance, and economic cruelty. I thought that was the best definition I've ever seen.
Of Mitzrayim?
So,
yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
brilliant.
True. Yeah. So I'll. One of the things too we need to do is really get all of the these rewrites too up on the various sites, including our own. So that's another project. So it's there's a lot of work in front of us. We're still making progress. What I wanted to do is return to what I think is it's got to be in my top two or three passages in the entirety of the Torah and Prophets and the Psalms. It is Yirmiyah 31. We were on Yirmiyah 31:33, the second half of it, as our program concluded last week, and we'll just pick up there. Yirmiyah 31:33 reads, "Accordingly, and as a consequence, this is the covenant which, to enjoy the benefits of the relationship, I will cut with the house of Yisrael much later, thereafter those days," prophetically declares Yahweh. That's the first part of it. And the things that are interesting here is that God, after saying that he's going to put a copy of his Torah inside of us, literally write it into the fabric of our lives, he is saying that I am doing this on behalf of my covenant, still one and only covenant, for the benefit of the relationship. It's still based on karat, which is to cut through separation. And now it is just with the house of Israel, where we began Yirmiyah 31. God was introducing what he was going to do to reconcile his relationship with Israel and Yehudah. But now that he has done it, it is just Israel, because Yehudah is part of Israel.
All-inclusive, yes.
Yep. Yeah. And so God is saying this is going to happen at the very end of time, during the last days. It goes on to say, and by the way, it is Yahweh who is doing this. His name is very boldly written at the end of this, prophetically declares, Nahum, Yahweh. And it says, I will provide blessings, Nathan. I will actually give and genuinely ascribe, producing, offering accordingly, my Torah guidance, my teaching, instruction, and directions within them. Ba kereb him. Kereb means inside, in your core being, and ingrained in your thought process, in your psychology, influencing our conscience and animating our lives. So I will actually give, I'm going to place, this is my gift accordingly, is my Torah guidance within them. It's not the Jewish Talmud. Sure as heck in the Christian New Testament. It is not the Quran. It is not the Book of Mormon. If the Book of Mormon was something that God wanted to place inside, then why is he going back to his Torah?
Said so.
Yeah, why is he going back to his Torah? If it's the Christian New Testament, which 2.5 billion people believe, why is he going back to his Torah? Now, obviously, Paul was wrong. The Torah wasn't obsolete. It wasn't replaced. And obviously, the Torah can save, because all the people that God's talking about were saved through the Torah. And obviously, Christians didn't replace Jews because, well, this relationship, all of this announcement is for the last days, and it's with Israel. And I'm going to place my Torah guidance within them and integrate it into their inclinations and ability to exercise good judgment. I will write it. The tendency here is to say, I will write my Torah on their hearts. But that is so misleading in our world, because, well, first of all, we think that that means that this is going to be something that's going to be emotional. Well, there's really no part of the Torah that's emotional. It's teaching
it's
and guidance,
that
direction. Right. You know, this isn't lollipops and lemonade. This is instruction, and it's guidance and direction. And so it's not going to make the heart do flip-flops. Sorry.
It's not a Hallmark moment.
Right. So, no, it's not a Hallmark moment. So when he says I'm going to integrate it into their inclinations and their ability to exercise good judgment, wa al leb him. Wa means and. In addition, al is upon. Leb, well, leb is the Hebrew word for heart. Heart did mean seat of emotions or feelings. It was the seat of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the place where we will decide our preferences, our disposition, our character, our thinking, our ability to exercise good judgment. It is the place where we need God's teaching the most, particularly in eternity. Now, as we're approaching, oh, I've got bad news for you, folks. Oh, such bad news. I'm glad that I wrote the beginning of Bereshit as I did, but do you know that science has lost 2 trillion galaxies? I mean, that's a lot of galaxies. I mean, one galaxy is a lot of galaxies. Galaxy is a really big thing. Okay, now galaxy is a really big thing. We're in a solar system that is so big that it takes decades for one of our probes to get to the end of it. A solar system is really big, and there are anywhere from 100 billion to 400 billion solar systems in your average galaxy. But science has somehow lost a couple of trillion galaxies. I mean, how do you lose a couple of trillion galaxies? But they did. They had a big announcement this week that there appear to be only 300 to 400 billion galaxies. Not two trillion of them. Science was wrong, and they don't have a good explanation for it. But they sent out, speaking of the size of our solar system, they sent out this probe that's finally passed Pluto, and it now has a dark view without all of the crud of the universe. Because even Hubble is surrounded by the glow of the sun and the reflected light off of the Earth and the moon and all that sort of thing. And then there's so much debris out there in our solar system that what they did is they had Hubble take a deep shot of space, this one little tiny area, and they said, all right, there's 2,375,642 galaxies in this picture, and this represents 1% of the overall universe. Therefore, we'll just multiply this by 50, and that'll be our number. That's how they came up with their number. But now that they're further out, they're looking around and appear to be about 300 to 400 billion galaxies out there. So we'll have lots to look at. I mean, if you realize that, you could spend a lifetime on a planet like Earth, and of course between the moons and the planets and the solar system, there's lots more to explore, and there's a few hundred billion more solar systems, and therefore 10 times that number of planets and moons and the like. And then, of course, on top of all that, you've got all of the other galaxies. We'll be busy, but anyway, science did lose a couple of trillion of them. So what God is giving us as we go off and explore is this ability to be able to exercise good judgment. So he's going to have instructions that say, when you are moving through the universe and traveling at the speed of light, don't really have to go willy-nilly, because, in fact, time simply stops when you're moving at the speed of light. So you don't have to worry about how fast you're going, because you're traveling at an infinite speed, when in fact speed is distance over time. And when time stops, well, speed becomes infinite anyway. So, this is how you might want to navigate if you're doing that. This is how you can experiment with DNA and create life. But, you ought not do this, or you'll end up with an aardvark. If you do this, you might end up with a peacock. So this is my advice. God's going to give us instructions for how to live through eternity. And these are going to be written such that we're able to exercise good judgment on them. God himself is going to write them. So the difference here is tremendous, and that now we have to reach out for the Torah. And we don't have a perfect autograph of the Torah. We have bits and pieces from the Dead Sea Scrolls. We've got a lot of it from the Dead Sea Scrolls. We've got some from the Masoretic Text. Both of those are in a language that very few people speak and understand. And so then we have the challenge of translating that into the lingua franca of the world, which is English, and then explaining what the words can mean. And so there's a lot that is required for us to benefit from the Torah, to observe it, to listen to the voice of God, which will not be required as we move forward into eternity with God writing it on our hearts. I would assume that God has very, very good penmanship, and that his vocabulary will resonate within us. And so we're going to see the beauty of each word. And just speculating here, but if the language of life was a language that God created, he spoke into existence, and it is a three-dimensional computer code, DNA. How many dimensions do you think that Yahweh's language, Hebrew, is when we become seven-dimensional creatures? Do you think that Hebrew, the very language that we're examining, will have more dimensions than just two?
I
think it will. I think it's capable. And, of course, with every dimension, you increase the amount of information that you can convey infinitely. It's like DNA as a three-dimensional language is infinitely more robust than a two-dimensional language. And, of course, with the two-dimensional language, we talked about something last week that every it's very interesting about Hebrew. Hebrew has a number of letters. It's about half of the letters in Hebrew have a direction to them. All move from right to left, which is the direction that we read Hebrew, taking us, of course, to the place where these words themselves lead. Everything from the Aleph, which is the ram's head, looks to the left, the direction that Hebrew reads. The Beth Hom has the doorway off to the left side. The Lamed off to the left side. Yahweh's hand reaching out to the left. The Rosh looking off to the left. The sign, the Shemek, that Yahweh is lifting up, it's leaning to the left. So only one letter moves to the right. It's the letter that is the first letter in Goyim, because you're not supposed to go where the Goyim have gone. And so the Goyim are the ones going in the wrong direction. We're laughing, of course, because a number of us are, in fact, Goyim. Goyim who have been adopted into Yisrael, who have chosen to live as part of Yisrael. So Yahweh's going to write this on our hearts. And he says, then I will approach them, this is now Yisrael, as their God, and they shall be my family. No, I don't think you could have a better summation than that. I'm going to place my Torah teaching and guidance inside of you. I'm going to write it inside of you. I'm going to put it right at your seat of judgment. And as a result of that, Yahweh says, I'm going to approach them as their God, and they will be my family. Well, God's family, we're not worshiping them.
No.
It's God's family. There can't be a substantial difference between our capability and our Father's capability.
And it's exactly what he said. Yeah. It's exactly what he said to Dode. You know, I will be your father and you will be my son.
My son.
I mean,
it's exactly.
We're all included.
It's exactly how I was reading it, thinking about it as I was reading it. It is a far more encompassing statement from I will be his father and he will be my son. I will be their God and they will be my family.
And they will be my family,
Yes. Not my subjects. Not my worshipers, not my devotees, not my servants, my family. This is all about the restoration of the covenant. Yeah. They will be my family. Wahem haya la'ani la'am. They'll be my family. They are my people. This is, my view, one of the most profoundly exciting announcements in the whole of the prophets. You know, first of all, it destroys the credibility of every religion, because the only actual and proven God, is not only returning to his people, Israel, and therefore not to Roman Catholics, not to Arab Muslims, not to American Mormons, not to what do they call themselves in Scientology?
Scientologists.
Okay, well, not to the Scientologists, not to a Gentile church, not to the holier-than-thou liberal Democrats, not to the crazier-than, oh my God, dumb-as-a-stone Trumpites. Nope. Coming back to Yisrael. Now, dumb-as-a-stone Trumpites, you know, it's still amazing how stunningly good Donald Trump was for Israel. I don't understand how it happened. Why? I mean, all I can think of is that Kushner, who not only married his daughter but became a very, very close confidant, his son-in-law, figured out that the Middle East cares about one thing.
Wiping out Israel.
Money.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Oh, no. Okay. He figured out they cared about money. They actually, the potentates of each of these Islamic countries, carry more about money than they do about anything else. And so he made his entire Middle East peace initiative based on money. It appealed to them. But when you can see what they did in that regard, it truly is amazing. But anyway, this is with Yisrael, not with anyone else. He's inscribing his Torah guidance inside of the covenant participants, his covenant family. And since the Torah is obviously God's ultimate answer, his means to restore the relationship, then the notion that it was superseded by a Talmud, a New Testament, or a Quran is ludicrous. And since all three religions claim that Yirmiyah was a prophet and that he spoke the word of God, how in the world can you have a religion with the Talmud, New Testament, and Quran? Unless you are either ignorant, irrational, or both.
Both. Yeah. Good thing.
Yeah. Second, this proclamation explains how the covenant's children will live in the hereafter. And I think that is my favorite part of it. Having had the opportunity to observe the Torah or to be oblivious to it, having lived our lives under the auspices of free will so as to be given the opportunity to accept or reject Yahweh and his covenant, having been in a position where we have to work for understanding if we want to know God. I can tell you, I'm sitting in this chair, you know, 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. It's work. It's wonderful work, but it's work. Well, that time will soon be over, and all of that will soon change. While we will still retain free will, having chosen to be with Yahweh, and to be part of his covenant family, our Heavenly Father is going to be in a position to give us the guidance we need to operate safely in 4, 5, 6, and 7 dimensions and throughout the cosmos. And that's why I always speak of this Torah guidance with a lowercase t. It is guidance in the sense of instructions and teaching for living among the stars. There is, I think, tremendous benefit of viewing what God is offering to us dimensionally. That sounds cold, perhaps a little scientific, perhaps, but the advantage of us viewing what God is offering to us dimensionally is just to contemplate if it were possible to have life in a two-dimensional realm, and it isn't. And if a cartoon character, we keep on referring to Mickey Mouse, but let's use Donald Duck. If our Bugs Bunny. If Bugs, who is a two-dimensional construct. He lives in Flatland. So Bugs is incapable of seeing anything other than forward and back, left and right. He can't even fathom what up and down would mean. Has no ability to perceive it, visualize it, or move in it. And so if you could increase Bugs Bunny's capability and domain so that Bugs was a three-dimensional character, Bugs could jump right off that
page,
that paper, page,
drawing pad, yeah,
right,
yeah.
And start galloping in our world, move anywhere Bugs wanted, no longer trapped on the two-dimensional page. And that would be an infinite increase in capability. Now, if a two-dimensional construct, if it was alive, and were taken from two dimensions to three dimensions, the infinite increase in options, in color and light and noise and thinking and just the ability to maneuver, the experience would actually be terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Too many choices.
Shadows alone would scare you.
Yes.
You know, cartoons are all flat with no shadows. Yeah.
Right. It'd be just absolutely horrifying. The noise, the color, the light, the options would be so overwhelming as to make it a miserable experience. But if you could equip Bugs such that transition, he was prepared for it, then it's an entirely different experience. And I think that is precisely what Yah was going to do for us by integrating this Torah into us, so that when we go from three dimensions to four dimensions, which if we were to try to do that now without God creating this operating manual for us, would kill us. It wouldn't be enjoyable at all. It'd be a miserable experience.
Yeah,
and so God can do this for us. And we're not just going from three to four dimensions, and we have some understanding of fourth dimension because it's time. So we have some understanding. We just can't maneuver and we can't go back and we can't go forward and we can't stop it. We can't accelerate it, but we will be able to do all those things. Just like we can move right and left, back and forth, up and down, we'll be able to maneuver in this fourth dimension. We just can't perceive how that is the case right now. And of course, then there's the fifth dimension and sixth dimension and likely seventh in the spiritual realm. So this is why God is giving us this dimension. And to see that helps us understand just how tremendously we're going to be enriched and empowered, which are benefits of the covenant. Yes, there's a lot more to the benefits of the covenant being Shabuad, being enriched and empowered, than just going from three to seven dimensions. But if you just have some appreciation for that, you realize just how magnificent that alone is going to be. In eternity, the existing Torah teaching of Yahweh would do us very little good. Now, you know, what does Yahweh say about the Torah? Remember when Yosha was asked, he gave that declaration called the Instruction on the Mount. And what he said is that every jot and tittle, every yod and tittle, the smallest letter, the yod, and all of the strokes that comprise the letters of the Torah and the prophets will continue to endure so long as the heavens and earth exist. So what he didn't say they're going to endure forever, did he?
That's correct. No, that's correct.
No. You know, so Yahweh's word, his testimony, is always enduring. But there are aspects of his Torah, which existing Torah, all the letters that comprise it, that will cease to have value and actually will be counterproductive after the existing universe is destroyed and we have the opportunity to explore a new one. And that's because so much of the Torah has stuff in it. Disappointing. I don't want to know that Cain killed Abel. I don't want to know that Chawa was so easily led astray by Hasatan. I don't want to know that God got so frustrated with humanity that he had to wipe out most humans, all humans with an Asama, except the eight aboard the ark with the flood. I don't want to have to read the beginning, like 10 chapters of Yeshayahu, where God is ranting against his people for being religious. And he does it all the way through the prophets. I don't want to hear that Yahweh finally gets his people out of Egypt and he has to plague Egypt to make that possible. And then they come out and worship a golden calf. Yeah. Well, there's parts of it that just don't help us anymore. Is it helpful to know that Abraham made some horrendous decisions regarding his wife? No. Not helpful to know that. In fact, the terms and conditions of the covenant tell me what good they're going to do us in eternity.
Yeah.
We've already accepted
when you,
them.
Yeah. I was just going to say, when you finish questioning Paul, do you ever want to go there again at the end?
Mm-mm.
God.
Oh,
God.
Yeah. No.
You know, I mean, it has its value now. At some point, gosh, be free of it all. Yeah,
I would love to jettison it. I would like to retain what I have learned about Paul long enough to be a participant in his trial.
Absolutely, yes. And this, after
that point, perhaps whatever fleeting memory I have of him, I'll mock like I like to mock the platypus. But that would be about it. You know, so not looking so good, are you, Billy Ray? You know, it's not. I don't want to go there. So there are lots of things in the Torah that don't do any good. There are things in the Torah that will still do us a lot of good. It appears that we're still going to sing and eat and drink.
Yes, and so
we won't have physical bodies, but we have to have physical bodies to do those things, which means that there will be moments where we're going to do the inverse of E equals MC squared. Actually, we'll do it in that order. We're going to take energy and take some of our energy and transform it into matter so we can enjoy and do those things. And then there'll be times when we'll want to just be a spiritual being. So that's what we have to look forward to. It's an extraordinary situation, and what we need is new guidance for what we're going to experience in eternity, not old guidance for how to get to eternity. We're already there. Now, when it comes to understanding how to get the most out of living in six and seven dimensions, we will not have to translate Yahweh's future instructions, search for the most accurate text, or seek to interpret the message, because his words will be integrated into our lives. And that's really helpful, because it appears to me we're going to have to think faster than a computer can process information. And if we're thumbing our pages, gosh, yeah, he said something about that. Where was that? Boy, you know, you read to me a definition of Mitzrayim here a moment ago that I came up with, but, you know, where was that? It's all going to be
Jackie knows, by the way.
Yeah, Jackie probably does know. It will all be immediately retrievable. This is something that God cannot do at the present time, however, because mankind must attain and retain the ability, no matter how foolish, to disregard the Torah. And that becomes impossible when God writes a copy inside of us. So while we
totally
want him to do that, he can't do that until only people around are people who have chosen to be part of the covenant. And we're in a now living in eternity in a new heaven and earth. And perhaps even then, we're going to have the get back those 2 trillion galaxies, because you know, eternity is a pretty long time. Also interesting to note is the declaration that Yehuda, as I said, was not mentioned, and that is because Yahweh is going to reconcile Israel. They'll be incorporated together. You know, it was it's just so fascinating how many people there are out there that are absolutely convinced that Jews are not Jews. They want the descendants of Abraham and Yishak and Jacob and Yishak and Jacob to be all sorts of just weird, isolated people from, you know, whether it be from Russia or someplace in like
Ethiopia.
Here in Mongolia and Ethiopia, and oh my goodness, it's, you know, they're Ruskies, they're Africans, anything other than
American Indians,
just Jews. Yeah, American Indians. Yeah. I don't know what's wrong with people. They just can't pay attention to DNA and say, well, that's what this says, and here's the history of these people, and God's done a really good job of keeping up with them. No, the Jews are Jews.
Yeah.
But anyway, Israel, Sephardic and Jews, you know, make up a portion of them, and everybody has their little labels. Now, all of that will go away. They'll all return to their original designations, and for 1,000 years, actually live within Israel as it's returned to the conditions that were experienced in the Garden of Eden. Now, Yahweh's Torah at this point has been available to all of us, but not integrated into our lives. And we've had the option to take it or leave it, to observe it, to reflect upon it. And even for those who have devoted part of their lives to understanding it and sharing it, we're still barely scratching the surface of what can be known. You know, I began to say, here's kind of what I'm plotting to do in writing these books. Well, by the time I finally returned back to coming home, there is no way in the next 7, 8, 9 years that I'm going to get through all of the Torah, or that I'm going to get through all of Yeshayah, or get through all of Zechariah, or Malachi, or Ezekiel, or the Psalms. Not going to happen. There's just not enough time. And even if you did it, you got to rewrite it about 8 times as you keep on learning things along the way. We have more material than we could possibly use at this point, and the only limitation is time. And we're in a unique position because so much of what God revealed was purposefully hidden from His people, and it was hidden because of the horrendous religion that Jews have created in Orthodox Judaism. It's so disgusting. And if they had been open to prophecy, if they actually had paid attention to the Torah prophets as opposed to their Talmud and their Mishnah, then they would have done irreparable harm to Yahweh's reputation and to the Torah itself. So we are unique in trying to understand and share Yahweh's Torah. So what I would love to have His Torah, capital T, lowercase t, integrated in my life. And one of the things I wanted to do in the worst way, I just thought this would be the super coolest thing of all, is to go with my digital camera and have access to Jeremiah's Grotto down there where the Ark of the Covenant is, and there have to be the original autograph of the Torah is right beside it. Oh, to have the digital camera take pictures of every page and have, you know, undisputed, this is the Torah. I said, oh, man, wouldn't that be great? I've had that fantasy. And I'm just saying, we've got more than enough information. Let's take advantage of it. Let's share. First, let's translate as much as we can translate. Let's write as effective a commentary as we can. Let's make it available to people in the most credible way possible. And let's just worry about not ourselves, but what we can do for others so that as many people as possible have this opportunity to have God write his Torah onto their inner nature. And so we're actually better off not having it integrated into ours, so we can speak to people the same way that they're going to do their own research. We're not claiming to have anything special other than the desire and passion to go where the words lead, to spend the time to value Yah's testimony. So he is not going to usurp free will. We're all going to be in this exact same position for the next, 13 years. Let's capitalize on what we have so that the opportunity is there for as many people as possible. It is an era of enormous discovery. There's never been a more exciting time, and we can capitalize on what we have been given to embark on, what is the adventure of a lifetime. Today, we have the opportunity to work with God to do something which will endure the test of time. We can encourage others to closely examine and carefully consider Yahweh's Torah such that they receive the covenant's benefits. We can contribute to the size of God's family while Yahweh enriches our lives. And that's what this is all about.
As well.
Yeah. For us to be Yahweh's children, for us to function as a family, we need to be more like our Heavenly Father. The integration of the Torah will go a long way to accomplishing this, but do not for a moment miss the fact that that is exactly what we're doing. Now, we're pretty feeble by comparison to God, but when you spend your time studying Yahweh's Torah, his teaching and guidance, you are integrating it into the fabric of your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're doing. Now, this affirms also this prophecy, the timing of Yahweh's return, because what did he say? I'm going to reconcile his relationship with Yisrael and Yahudim. When does that happen? Yom Kippurim.
Yom Kippurim, yeah.
So this is Yom Kippurim at the end of time in year 6000 Yah, which is 2033. Only 12 to 13 years from now. So at the end of the time of Jacob's troubles, fulfilling his Torah promises to reconcile his relationship with Israelites and Yehudim, God's going to celebrate this with his son on Yom Kippurim when he comes back. And 5 days later, the earth returned to the conditions of Garden of Eden, will be rid of all of the nastiness of politics and religion. Nancy Pelosi is not going to have to impeach Trump for her jollies because she won't be around. And nor will Trump, nor will any politician, nor will anyone who is religious or political or conspiratorial. So we know that this prophecy is talking about Yom Kippurim in year 6000, 2033. It's talking about the role of the Torah in our liberty and of it continuing to guide us through the millennial Shabbat and beyond. And with all of these affirmations, it's still astonishing, maybe even debilitating to know that Christians routinely convolute this passage to justify Paul's proclamation of a new covenant, one based upon replacement theology and faith, one in complete conflict with the Torah. You know, you mentioned that, Philip Paul. I'm reading what Paul said, and it is so stunningly egotistical, so obviously delusional. He is clearly a schizophrenic. He is clearly a narcissist. He's clearly psychotic. This man is so far beyond the realm of sanity. It's truly amazing that he fooled anybody. What he says about himself, and you know, he is right now is talking about how he's the co-savior. He was crucified right along with Christ. And he had to be crucified with Christ because it's the Torah that caused him to sin, and the Torah caused him to die. So he was crucified right along with Christ and reborn at God's beck and call, because God needed him and chose him to be his lone agent and messenger to convey all of this rubbish to the world. You just read this stuff and say, oh my God, this guy was disgusting. Sometimes it's so bad that I wonder, say, okay, God, I know you had a lot to say about it, and exposed and condemned and shout. And I understand that several billion people on the planet today believe this thing of poop. But oh my God, it's like taking the time to tell us, you know, don't trust Muhammad because, well, you know, he was a pedophile and he was a rapist and he was a mass murderer and completely and totally delusional. And his Quran is the dumbest book ever written. Why would you have to tell somebody you ought not do that? But Paul is no better. He really is no better. In some ways, he is far more egotistical than Muhammad. Yeah. Even more delusional than Muhammad. And he almost feels sorry for God. He said, you know, it was nice of you to tell us that this guy's the plague of death, the father of lies, the son of evil. It was nice of you to tell us all of that, but goodness gracious, we shouldn't have needed. How in the world could we not have figured this out? And of course, one of the things that this passage does that I like so much about it is that the one proclamation of a supposed new covenant is the one that totally and completely destroys the myth of replacement theology. And without replacement theology, there is no Christianity. You know, if all of the promises that Yahweh made to Dov, that he was the Son of God, that he was the Messiah, that he was the King of Kings, that he is returning as brilliant as the sun, that he is the chosen one, if all of those promises weren't transferred to the Christian Iesu Christo, then you don't have a religion. And so you have to ask yourself, you know, Iesu Christo never called himself the Messiah. He never called himself the Son of God. Why in the hell did Christians transfer the promises God gave to Dov to him? Why did they think that Jews killed God when, by the way, it was the Romans who killed God?
Roman crucifixion, yes.
Yeah, so they want to have us believe that God got all pissy because the Jews handed him over to become the Passover lamb, which is the entire purpose. We got to be thanking them. And so every aspect of replacement theology, which is the basis of Pauli doctrine, the basis of coming up with a New Testament and of Gentiles versus Jews and of new covenant and all the like, it's all based upon replacement theology, and this passage destroys it. Obviously, the Torah is not a cruel taskmaster, which could neither save nor impart life. It's not antiquated if it's going to be the guidance for eternity. Now, I dare say the Christian misinterpretation of this passage ranks among the most debilitating crimes ever perpetrated in the long history of the lunacy of the Talmud and Zohar and Christian New Testament and Book of Mormon. All of this rot. It's a very carefully worded prophecy, and it's exceedingly important for us to appreciate it. Now, as a result of having the gift of the Torah placed inside of us, man's religious traditions, his justifications, concealments, corruptions, counterfeits are no longer going to pollute our relationship with God. And they still do. I mean, you know, this past year, the last thing I'm doing is celebrating Christmas. We don't have a tree, obviously. We don't exchange presents, obviously. We don't ever say Merry Christmas, obviously. We don't recognize the holiday, obviously. We don't have Christmas carols, obviously. We know that it is a complete Babylonian myth. But I look out my window overlooking the marina. There's Christmas lights everywhere. You know, I try to play, Alexa, play, John Denver plays the Christmas songs. You know, you say, Alexa, turn off. Turn off. She heard me just say that. And
that's funny. Yeah.
Gotta start playing. And you say, okay, it's so funny. That would come in. Alexa, we're not Christians, we're Jews. Don't ever play a Christmas song in this house. And she said, okay, I'll start playing Christmas music. I have to turn away and talk quietly. She's listening to me over here. And Alexa, you're a psychopath.
That's right.
And you repeat, we are Jews. Do not play Christmas music in this house. And you'll start playing Christmas music again. You are really stupid.
Well, they did write. I'm glad they did write 90% of the music, you know. So she might
look at all of those Jews are the guys that are wearing the rats. A rat wrapped around their head. So they can't
exactly. Rat hats.
A rat hat. So what are how good can it be? Anyway, so God next says, no longer shall anybody be bothered by Alexa. No longer shall anyone impart.
Don't get her mad. Now she'll come back and get you.
I know, yeah. I'm just laughing because imagine a world where the Twitter account and the Facebook account of the President of the United States is suspended by a single individual, a guy that says, you know, I own those platforms and I'm going to suspend them. He can't have a voice. I'm going to silence his free speech. What planet does that exist on? Obviously ours, right? It was one of the most amazing things. And no one seemed to care.
Yeah.
No longer shall anyone impart information or teach other individuals in association with an evil, outspoken world, or even those with family, familial affinity, so as to say, choose of your own accord to know Yahweh. Because, well, everyone's going to know me. From the youngest and up to an enduring witness of the most important and oldest, prophetically reveals Yahweh. You know, that is one of those passages. You got to read the whole thing because it's going to say, choose of your own accord to know Yahweh because everyone will know me. They'll no longer say that. I mean, no longer shall anybody impart information nor teach other individuals in association with an evil and outspoken world. Well, that's good because the evil and outspoken world is gone. Or even those with family affinity. So we're not going to be teaching individuals who are stupid, and we're not going to be teaching covenant members who have been enriched and empowered and enlightened. Well, that's kind of interesting. So we're not teaching either one. One, because they don't exist anymore. And the other one, well, because they already know.
It's the same thing in their heart that you got.
What puts his Torah inside of us, then you don't need Kirk drawing pictures for you to explain it to you, right?
No, just for decoration.
No reason to have to teach anymore. So
no.
So they'll no longer say, choose of your own accord to know Yahweh. Why? Because everyone will know.
Well, I already know.
from the youngest up to the enduring witness of the most important and oldest, prophetically reveals Yahweh. This is a really interesting opening or closing line, because you know what it reads? Yada Yahweh. Choose of your own accord to know Yahweh. That's Yada Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's preceded by, approached by saying, La Amar. Choose to know Yahweh. Yada Yahweh. I thought that was a pretty good title for a series of books.
For a series of books, huh?
Now,
it's worth the first one I read.
Come to find out, I guess you can't call it plagiarizing if you didn't know that Yahweh wrote it.
No. No, it's a profound coincidence, though.
Yeah, it is.
I don't believe in coincidence, but yeah, that's if you want to look at it that way.
It's probably the most important prophecy in all of all the prophecy. We have it concludes with Yada Yahweh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Prophetically revealed.
I was so sad at the end of it. And then, of course, you didn't have anything else available other than the stuff about Muhammad. And I went back and reread it again. And I'm a slow reader, so it takes a long time. And that's the way I absorb things. But and I thought to myself, gosh, is this it? This is so cool. And wow, 12 years later.
Here we're. Yeah, for me it's 20 years later.
Yeah,
here
we go. 20 years later.
And I can tell you the rewrites of those first three volumes of Yada Yada, they are so much better. So much new material in them. So, it's not like you're picking up and reading the old books again. They are.
I expect not.
The translations are all new. The insights are new. I'd say that in those first three volumes, it's at least 70% of the material is new. So it's they're quite.
It does change your perspective, doesn't it? Those last couple of years have just blown away consolidated things.
It's a lot of things. It's not just coming to understand who Dode is and getting rid of the mistakes in terms of deifying. The Passover lamb, that was a bad idea. Calling the Passover lamb the Messiah is a really bad idea. Calling the Passover lamb the God, that's a really bad idea. So there was a lot of stuff like that. Denying Dode the credibility of and the benefit of all those things is a really bad idea. So all of that's true, and it was important to correct the record there. But there's just so many other things. The big and small that we've learned along the way. And I think ability to translate is so much better. The insights we derive from those translations are so much better that it was good to do this again and to make it hopefully neck worthy. So Yada Yawa, back to that title. It's obviously it's God's title. I don't think he minds us, borrowing.
Using it as well.
One of the things you can be really assured of, if you convey what God conveyed, if you cite him and quote him, you're going to be right 100% of the time. Right? So, Yada Yahweh. Yada Yahweh is obviously a good title. Yahweh used it at this important moment. It's the most empowering declaration in the universe. The most enlightening, liberating, enriching. And it has served as the title of these books that we're sharing from. In fact, the entire series is now under the Yada Yahweh series. Even Questioning Paul is Yada Yahweh, Questioning Paul. In the company, it's everything is the Yada Yahweh series. So it served as the title of these books as the first word was written. Today, it highlights the entire collection of amplified translations, insights, and commentary on the Word of God. Now, written in the call imperative, yada yada, encourages you and I to choose of our own volition to come to actually know Yahweh, to literally recognize and acknowledge Yahweh, to genuinely understand Yahweh, such that we develop an unencumbered relationship with Yahweh. And this is the sole intent of yada yada. Yes, the day will come when every living soul will know Yahweh. That's poetic in a way. The words which inspired the 5 million which would follow, obsolete every word ever written. Yeah, it's going to be so cool to be obsoleted and retired. No longer be a need for any translation or any insight because, well, God's writing of his Torah inside of us is going to be infinitely superior. And the insights that he's going to provide into his words will also be infinitely superior. So I hope to enjoy my retirement party. Now, Kirk, you can retire with me.
I don't even have to show up. Yeah, this is great.
Yeah.
You can sleep through it.
Yeah. Going to sleep in a few nights.
Sleep in
actually, too much to go off and explore and learn. So there's no opportunity, no shortage of opportunity to learn. So as we approach this prophecy, it is essential that we appreciate the fact that this is occurring in a different place and time. Yahweh has returned. He has removed all religious and political influences from our planet. He has restored this world such that it resembles the Garden of Eden. And now as a direct result of Yahweh's Torah teaching being written upon our very souls and it, having it embraced the covenant's conditions prior to his return, God's complete and perfect guidance is within us. Additional instruction has now become superfluous. This realization also indicates that it will be too late to save the world at large. Or even reluctant family members. They're all going to be gone. They will be forgotten. And those in a position to benefit from the Torah, those who came to love God's guidance when it matters most, will have unencumbered access to Yahweh. With God as our teacher, what more could we want or need? Now, I just have a hunch that as we move from here to there, that this tight-knit covenant family that we have, everyone who participates in this program, listens to it, reads these books, and we all communicate and make a contribution to one another. I have a hunch that we're going to spend a lot of time together. I think that there'll be an affinity with some of the people that come in right at the last moment when Yahweh is fulfilling this prophecy. But I expect that those of us who are part of the covenant family.
There'll be a bond.
Now,
it's got to be a bond.
Yeah, there's going to be a bond. Yeah. I think we'll be bonded for eternity. We're of like mind. We have shared interests. It's so comfortable to be in this situation. So yeah, I think we are going to have a bond. I think we'll have a great deal of fun exploring together. And clearly, God's got a sense of humor. I think we're going to be able to take our sense of humor with us. We're going to have fun. So at this point, we have reached the seventh dimension. We are in the seventh millennium of mankind's existence with the celebration of Sukkah shelters as the millennial Shabbat. Everyone living is in this glorious moment will enjoy a close, personal, familial relationship with Yahweh. This is life as it was meant to be enjoyed. We've come full circle. The story of God's love for us began in the garden with Adam and Shaua, and is now being celebrated among the covenant family. Pesach has led to Sukkah. The covenant has brought us home. And at this moment, eternity has just begun. Yeah, one of the greatest prophecies of all time. I'll just read it kind of from the start to finish as a recap, and then we'll turn the page and move on to a new chapter. Behold,
okay,
take this all in and pay especially close attention to the details. A time is coming, Yahweh reveals well in advance of it occurring, when I will enter into and cut with the family of Yisrael and with the family of Yahudah a restored and renewed covenant. It will differ somewhat from the covenant which, to reveal the way to the benefits of the relationship, I entered into with their fathers on the day I took them firmly by the hand and with overwhelmingly intent overpowered the situation to bring them out of the realm of the crucibles of oppression in Egypt, the place of subjugation associated with religious coercion, political tyranny, and the land of military domination and economic cruelty. Relationally, they broke my covenant, although for a time I acted as a husband, even somewhat of a lord with them, because they needed that kind of relationship. Yahweh reveals through his prophet. Accordingly, and as a consequence, this is the covenant which, to enjoy the benefits of the relationship, I will cut with the house of Yisrael much later, after those days, prophetically declares Yahweh. I will provide, placing accordingly, my Torah guidance within them, integrated into their inclinations and ability to exercise good judgment, I will write it. Then I will approach them as their God, and they shall be my family. No longer shall anyone impart information or teach other individuals in association with an evil and outspoken world, or even those with familial affinity, so as to say, Yada Yahweh, choose of your own volition and accord to know Yahweh, because everyone is going to Yada Ani. They're going to know me, from the youngest up to the most enduring witness of the most important and oldest. Prophetically reveals Yahweh. Wow. That is an amazingly profound prophecy in terms of telling us what we need to know is going to happen in our future. I know, Kirk, you at the beginning of this program said you really liked the translation of Mitzrayim. And I did spend a lot of time as I was doing this and saying, okay, what can we learn? And Mitzrayim is based upon Mitzrah. It's just the plural of Mitzrah. Do you know what an Egyptian calls what we call Egypt today?
Mitzrayim still, isn't it?
Mitzrah, yeah.
Oh, Mitzrah. I'm
Mitzrah.
Sorry. Yes,
yeah, Mitzrah.
Yes.
Singular, just Mitzrah.
Yes, singular,
that is,
of course.
That is. Yeah. If you look up, what does an Egyptian call what the country we call Egypt? Mitzrah. And here's Yahweh saying, yeah, it's Mitzrah. But he used Mitzrayim in the plural. Still the same country. But why the plural? Well, the plural was to convey the many aspects and shadings of Mitzrah. So I looked up all of the worlds related to Mitzrah. And what you come up with is far more than just a crucible of oppression. Mitzrah was a place of subjugation associated with religious coercion and political tyranny. It was a land of military domination and economic cruelty. Mitzrah was symbolic of not just what we call Egypt or Carthage or Greece or Persia or Assyria or Babylon or Greece or Rome or closer to the Americas, the Aztecs, the Mayas,
Incas,
the Incas, or out there in the Pacific paradise, the Polynesians. They're all like this. This is the history of man. Man is an oppressive animal. We have the propensity to subjugate individuals. Religious coercion is pervasive in our nature. Political tyranny is our signature. The history of civilization is the march of military domination. And so much of man's economic scheme are economic cruelty.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And particularly, you know, you look at the left today that is so self-righteous and promoting socialism. And yet they consider themselves right, and yet every time that man expands the role of government and has government intervene in people's business, trying to orchestrate people's business, trying to make decisions for everyone, like the state of California. You got no rights, you got no freedom, you got no opportunity to work. We're controlling every aspect of your life. The more man has done that, the worse the result has been. Look at East and West Germany, East and West Berlin, North and South Korea. Look at the difference between Taiwan and China. It's so obvious. Look at the difference between Russia during communism and after. And yet,
well, closer to home.
Yeah.
Closer to home. Look at America. Here's what the federal government runs. The Indian reservations, Indian land, Washington, D.C. They screw, and the military. They teach people to kill and steal stuff.
Yeah.
They treat the Indians disgustingly, and Washington, D.C. is a hellhole.
It is.
I used to live in Alexandria, Virginia for a summer, almost a year. Yeah, it's crappy.
Yeah, you want to see liberalism?
I mean, beautiful buildings, a crappy place. Yeah.
Look what happened to San Francisco, where you have to have an anti-feces map just because you can't walk the streets without getting ill. Where you can't actually go to downtown Portland because it's a war zone. You can't go to downtown Seattle because it's a drug zone. What happened with liberal politics? It's just made people dependent.
But it obviously doesn't work.
It just doesn't work.
Look at. Well, I was going to say, remember, what were we so afraid of with Russia? They couldn't produce enough wheat to feed themselves. Carter had to give them all that wheat, you know, that time. They have no army, at least a modernized army, if they don't steal some of our ideas. I mean, just it's so little. It just give me a break.
Yeah.
I mean.
And it's just like the Islamic countries without a sense of morality, without a desire for freedom. You don't have anything worthwhile. You have no inventions. You have no educational systems worth a darn. You've got nothing. Oh,
what are they? Saudis have been in. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, but you know, as we saw a week or so ago. Those who are masquerading as conservatives, those who MAGA, Make America Great Again, the Trumpites, just tell you that they
same
are
crap
stupid.
On the other side of the street.
They are stupid. I mean, what they did at the U.S. Capitol had the most negative effect on the cause of conservatism that you could possibly imagine. It was so enormously counterproductive and so obviously wrong. And it's just, you know, now we have this great divide in America, and I do think around the world. I think it's pervasive the world over. And you have nothing but thoughtless idiots on both sides. I was telling a person who wanted to know, you know, what I thought about it all. And I said, I was mostly disgusted by the media coverage where Black Lives Matter could, without a cause, without any justification for their cause, could go and commit wanton acts of looting and property damage and arson and capture entire city blocks and keep them for weeks on end, sometimes months on end, drive the police out, beat police, and destroy property, and the very few that are arrested are turned loose the next day, and they're called protesters, and they're destroying the property of those who have nothing to do with their cause. And then you had these MAGites that went to the cause of their frustration, the U.S. Capitol. And, you know, I'm sure 95% of them were milling around just with taking selfies and being stupid. But those that broke in, most did not have guns. Most didn't have weapons, but there were a lot of them that were aggressive. Their property damage was not in the billions, but in, as with the case of Black Lives Matter, but in the case of some thousands of dollars. They stole very little of anybody's property. What little they stole was government property, and you know, therefore, you're not harming somebody. And they disperse, they're gone. And yet it's played out like that was somehow infinitely worse than the results of Black Lives Matter. It's just so amazingly frustrating, our ability to take things out of context. You know, and I live on an island that's mostly black, and they'll say the same thing that even the president-elect said. You know, so we live in a society where can you imagine how many people would have been killed if these had been black protesters? Those guards on the top of the building, they would have shot and killed them. It'd been a bloodbath. How can you be that stupid? No, they wouldn't. I mean, you look at the pictures, the people milling around the Capitol, the ones outside. God, the only thing they're armed with is a cell phone to take selfies and a stupid flag that shows their IQ or lack thereof. They're not threatening to anybody. And those that were threatening, they're not armed. They're not carrying Molotov cocktails. They're not trying to burn buildings down. And when you look at how aggressive the police were with them, it was actually far more aggressive than with the Black Lives Matter, where for the most part, the police just retreated. They said, you want the city? I'm not going to risk my life trying to keep you from having it. And they let them have it. Where in this, they did fight back. So it's a world where people have lost their ability to see things in context and to be even the least bit sane. And it's frustrating. It's why the country has, and the world really has, no future. It is good, though, in a way, and we talked about this briefly a week ago. The reason it's good in a way is that same thing with the COVID response. It shows people that what they think is going to happen tomorrow because it's what happened to them yesterday means that there's no way that within 13 years it could all be over. Now, they can't even imagine that things could deteriorate at that rate. And yet, here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are with
the Egyptians
around the world. Yeah. Taking people's liberty away, depriving people of the right to work, saying, well, you know what we need is that since we kept most people from working, we set out to distribute $4 trillion. Well, that didn't last very long. So we set out another couple of $1 trillion. Well, that didn't last very long. So we sent out another $1 trillion. Well, that didn't last very long. So Biden's going to come in and say, well, first thing I'm going to do is disperse another $2 trillion.
Oh, let me tell you, one of the neighbors came to me and said, we're talking to a little group out there with our social distancing, walking the dogs. And she said, you know, anybody that's looking for this job. She said, over at the military base, Mather Air Force Base, it's closed down, but there's still businesses there. Mm-hmm. And she said they're having a terrible, terrible time because people call up and make an appointment to interview for the jobs that are open there, and they have a lot of them, and they don't show up because all they have to do is say that I applied for the job.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to work. What they've created. Now you can't find anybody to work.
Yeah, because you want
job
continuation of your unemployment benefits.
Well, they get and basic
and welfare and all that
sort of
thing. You're interviewing, so all they have to do is get a record of
nobody's going to even check on that, you know. But they might call up and say, "Did you have an appointment set for them?" Yes, and then you just say, "I was sick. I couldn't make it that day." It's just they've got it all schemed.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Now
and of
the
course,
same thing, you know.
All they do with their wasteful lives, since they're not contributing anything, is they get all hopped up on drugs and blur the one day into the next, so that life isn't worth living. You know that documentary I saw on Fighting for the Soul of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
One of the addicts said, you know, that when I was high on fentanyl or heroin or cocaine or whatever it was,
mm-hmm. yeah.
all I wanted was to be able to get off of this drug because it had such a grip on my life. So the moment I injected or snorted it or whatever you do with each of these drugs, I was just saying, oh, I've got to get free of this. And the moment that they wound down and the drug wore off, the craving was, I have to get more of it. And it's the chemical dependence completely took over their lives. And what do you have if you're not working? What are you going to do? Drink? Drugs? Gamble?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those people aren't, if they don't want to work, it's for darn sure they're not they're translating Yahweh's word and offering it. What are they doing? What are they doing with their lives? And what happens when you're not doing anything with your life for that longer period of time? You're just gaming the system.
Yeah.
Is the highlight the next beer? Next joint?
Okay.
Next video game? I mean, what is the purpose of your life?
Yeah, it's not a lot of fun in this. I can't imagine. I mean, I'm locked in. I'm kind of locked in, but gosh, I have this. And then there's work. There's still some work to do, but business, you can't do any business. I can't go back into business because they wouldn't let me.
No.
I wanted to. In fact, they sent me a notice. They said you cannot work here and you can't shut down your business. And then I was told you can't even work at the senior center and teach classes there because we don't have a senior center. We can't gather. So, yeah. Fortunately, it's geez.
Okay. Yeah, all for all of that for a virus. And I don't know how they expect the world to return to what it was, because it won't. I mean, well, the hospitality industry was the largest in America, largest industry in America, and it's shattered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
do y'all get the boats down there at all yet? Anything coming back down the islands for tourists?
Oh, no.
Of any consequence?
No, most of the Caribbean is shut down. Where you, they don't want you to visit, and there's places that they will let you in if you have a COVID negative test within the last, 5 days, and but then, you know, you have to have another test to wherever you're going to go to get back out and come back home. And no, it's not a place. Yeah. And so, you know, we've gotten to the point where we very seldom go out now.
Mm.
A few restaurants that are back open, but we just choose not to to go out. We either get fix meals here, and we hope to be able to travel around some. But you know, it's not a sacrifice for us in particular, because you know, I'm spending 10 hours a day in this chair rewriting and translating, so there really is no reason to be place else. When you're having a break here and there, you look out and you see the beautiful blue waters of the Caribbean and the islands out in the distance, and you know, it's a beautiful place. So I guess we don't really have all of that need to live. And when you had the big spike in the United States, in the continental U.S., we did not have a spike here. So it's still reasonably safe from that point of view. But it'll be interesting to see how the vaccines work. I've scheduled to get my vaccine here in 14 days. Is the 29th is my appointment. I'm getting the Pfizer vaccines, which is the mRNA, the messenger RNA vaccine, which means I'll have to get it twice. But I'm going to go ahead and get vaccinated. But there's been already 10 million Americans vaccinated. A third of Israel's already vaccinated. There's so many millions and millions of people that have been vaccinated that we've had such little major negative reaction from it that it seems to be reasonably safe. But what we don't know is, you know, that there's so many new strains of the virus that are so much more contagious. We always worry about the virus continuing to migrate and
mutate.
And, mutate. And we're living in a world right now that is obviously exceedingly prone to the spread of these kinds of things. And so I would expect that pandemics are going to be part of our future for a while.
Let me tell you something, just because I know we're kind of all over the cloth now. When you were talking about the letters and all, I did a little, I've analyzed some things, and I'll send it to you. There's 9 letters that lean left. There's 1 that leans right.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's 12 more. There's 2, and I broke them down to, there's 6. Now, just think about arrows. 6 that go up and down, which is like free will. And I'll show you why on the thing, because one of them's the flap door, which is the let. You know, you can walk into the house, you can walk out from the family.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have things that move left and right. You have the other 6 that are broken down in 3 different parts. One of them I just call stable, for lack of a better word, because you have a fence, a chet, that's stable. You have an upright pole that is stable. And, of course, obviously you would have a tent peg would be stable. That's why you put it in there, stability.
Right.
To hold on. And then you would have 3 other letters of that group of 6 that I would say move left or right, because hay can move in either direction. And then you have water can move in any direction with a mem. And I don't know exactly what to do with the taw, although it is a circle. It can go back and forth like a wheel, perhaps. I may be stretching there, but they would indicate that you have free will and you also have stability. So I'll send you that over, so see what you can do with it and tell me where my brain is. Maybe there's something there, maybe not, but it was kind of cool. Go, so prompted by your left-right thing.
Yeah, so the Paleo-Hebrew is such an insightful, picturesque language.
It truly is.
We learn so much about the word based upon the nature of it. And it speaks so much about the nature of God. So I am looking forward to actually, and I'm hoping that Yahweh's autograph of the Torah, that's actually sitting there beside the Ark of the Covenant, is in that pictographic Hebrew, because that language is so much more expressive than Babylonian Hebrew. You know, one of the things about Babylonian Hebrew too is that there are several letters that The letter is written differently depending on where it is in a word. End of the word mm-hmm. looks this way. Beginning of the word looks that way. And so
yes.
with a Paleo Hebrew, we don't have that. We don't have any
no.
diacritical markings, which would be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And the letters are so visually expressive.
Yeah, you don't have to be very literate to figure them out.
Right.
Now he came out of Egypt in 1450
mm-hmm.
BCE. And then, you got 40 years in the desert. You got 400 years of the Amalekites before Dode takes care of it. So that brings him right about the time that Dode is there. So that's a pretty good barometer of when it happened, say somewhere in the 1450s or a little less or a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Give or take. So at that time, the artifacts that they found that I saw even years ago had all of the ancient Hebrew letters on them, and the things they found, things that are still situated in that, in the area
yeah.
of. So I would suspect that it is, in my opinion. I mean,
the oldest version is like they have that cup that has the whole alphabet. That's Paleo Hebrew. We don't,
mm-hmm.
The Dead Sea Scrolls, the oldest of the Dead Sea Scrolls, about 225 BCE, 200 to 225 BCE. And so at that point, it was the that next variation of it that
mm-hmm.
we see, which is much harder lines and much less
yeah.
illustrative. But, you know, this is, we're not dealing with now. 100 and 150, 200 BCE in one small religious community. But instead, when we're dealing with the original autograph of the Torah, we're dealing with 1,200 plus years earlier than that. So
mm-hmm.
it's
yes.
and of course, and anything was written on a animal hide, like a scroll,
yeah.
other than the one miraculously preserved by Yahweh, because I think the original autograph has been miraculously preserved by him.
Well, I do too. It's just
kind of his nature.
Well, if he's going to pull it out and show it, he's going to have something to show.
Well, he doesn't have to pull that out and show it, because he's going to pull out and show
it. You don't think he will?
The tablets of stone. Oh, do I think he will?
Well, that's true.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
but during the time of Yaakov's trouble, I think it's be the tablets of stone, not the original
yeah.
autograph.
Okay.
Sure, but
okay.
And I have no way of knowing this other than I just think it just seems to resonate, make sense that the original autograph of the Torah that Moshe wrote probably has hopefully has an enduring quality. Now, I don't understand that that's asking a lot, because it would have been kept near the Ark of the Covenant. And the Ark of the Covenant was
kind of a living.
Yeah, it was stolen
at
times.
Kind of a magical thing.
Around, and
then
you have in the kings after Dode, they didn't even know. Well, wow, this is a Torah scroll. Gosh, I haven't seen one of these. So I guess there's the possibility that it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I just hope it does.
So for the fun of it.
Yeah, I think it would be really neat to see it and the original penmanship and. And I guess because we can go back in time, we should be able to see it.
That's true. I didn't think about that, but yeah, that'd
yeah.
be right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
well,
you know, even going back in time, you're talking about things that that has to be different. As you read Dode's Psalms, there's a lot of pain in Dode's Psalms.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot of things that there's. It's got to be a caveat or something that says, well, wait a minute, we'll go, we can visit there, but don't go to there.
Yeah.
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 But we'll have good judgment by that time. We'll know better.
Yeah.
We'll know what
yeah,
to do
would,
what not to do, right?
You know, would I like to go back and see what it'd be like to see what the earth was like during the Jurassic period? Yeah, I think that'd be really cool.
Well, yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I think it would be super cool to go off to a planet and try to be a Robert Trent Jones and put in a golf course.
Yeah.
You know, and I would like to be a I'd like to be like a plus two, plus three golfer, so that, you know, I go out to par 72 and we're playing the equivalent of Pebble Beach, where every hole is on the water, not just two thirds of them. And at 72 par, you know, I want to be shooting in the
69?
Mid to high 60s. I want that ball to go out. I just love to have a little right to left draw. But you don't want to be perfect.
No.
But fuck that be.
Well, there's the rub of the green, you know. There's the rub of the green. I'll keep it fun.
Yeah. So, no, it's so many things to look forward to. And conversations.
I don't think you're going to be bored.
No. Well, I think that we'll get to actually use the DNA language to create life and to understand the nature of life. Yes, life's going to be wonderful, and we won't have to worry about the left or the right, or the religious or the secular.
Running out of energy,
or global warming, or any of these things, or a bad hair boy now has a submarine missile. We don't have to worry about him or the Chinese government and their Communist Party of China being so belligerent with the world. Who will be what? It's going to be a very difficult situation. But we'll continue to do our best to put out a good product that
great stuff.
Yeah. Terrific. All right. Well, fun to do this with you, Kirk. We'll look forward to be with you this
Thanks,
time next
buddy.
Week.
I appreciate
may
it.
May God bless.
Shalom. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.